Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes. Hello and welcome back to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on negative online reviews, how to deal with them. I'm joined by Barrister Claire Overman from Doughty Street Chambers in London. Claire specialises in all aspects of media and information law, including defamation, privacy, data protection and harassment, and she has represented clients in the County Court, High Court and the Supreme Court. Claire is ranked as a defamation and privacy junior and for data protection in both Chambers and Partners and the Legal 500. Claire, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. Look forward to discussing.
Yes, indeed. Negative online reviews. I mean, they can make or break a business. So how do you deal with reviews about your business that can be very damaging? Some interesting stats when it comes to negative online reviews are that a staggering 84% of people trust online reviews as much as they trust recommendations from friends. I probably have to, you know, have to say that I'm a part of that percentage. 38% of UK consumers read product or service reviews before they go buying. And this is big. 92% of shoppers will not trust a business or a purchase if a product has no review. I mean, that just goes to show how much we're living life online. I mean, and it's not all sort of gloomy. 56% of people say that when a business responds to their review, it leads them to change their often negative opinion of the company. So, Claire, negative reviews can be extremely damaging to a business, as we've said, and especially a small one. What have been some of the most extreme situations in which you have seen and dealt with negative online reviews for your corporate clients?
Hattie, you're absolutely right. Businesses, especially small businesses, do rely a lot on the reviews that they receive online. And I do see a real spectrum of negative online reviews. And it's really important for businesses to really consider what is being said about them or their products. So to take one example at the sort of less serious end of the spectrum, of course people will disagree about products and some people simply won't like your products. Now that's very different to some of the more serious cases that I've dealt with, and really some of the most serious have concerned businesses' integrity and things like their honesty when they're dealing with clients. You know, that's so fundamental to a business, and to have a review that's suggesting that you're not honest with your clients or that you otherwise lack integrity can of course be hugely damaging to a business's reputation. And the other more topical one, I suppose, that's worth mentioning is particularly since the start of the pandemic, I've had clients who've been really concerned with allegations that they've not complied with COVID regulations, with things like the provision of PPE for staff or ensuring their safety. And again, you know, it's such an emotive subject and businesses really do care how they're perceived when it comes to things like that, and the damage can be very serious.
No, indeed. I mean, and I think it goes without saying that you can have 100 customers who are utterly satisfied and utterly happy with your service or product, and you don't really see many great reviews when people are happy, I have to say, apart from on Amazon. I tend to see a lot of happy reviews on Amazon. And then you get that one client or customer who really is disgruntled, and they will go out of their way and do the most damaging things to try and hint, you know, to get customers to see other potential customers to see your reviews. I mean, I had recently a client who had somebody threatening them and saying, if you don't give me a full refund plus X pounds, then I am, they actually were a reporter. And they said, I know how to do things online very well, and I will go online and I will create so much damage against your business. And I thought, no, that's horrid. That is really horrible. And they came to us and asked for our advice but at Red Barlow, my law firm. But, you know, I was quite shocked at that, because I thought that's a really nasty approach. I mean, there's nothing wrong if you've had a bad experience and you want to, you know, just talk about that to some degree, and that's what we're talking about today. And then if the business rectifies it, you might say, okay, I'll retract my negative review. But to be nasty like that, I was quite shocked with it. I mean, it's been reported that over 53% of customers expect businesses to respond to their negative reviews within a week. However, most of them are left disappointed. Over 63% of consumers say that they've never heard back from a business about their review. Now, what would you say are the do's and the don'ts when dealing with online negative reviews as a business?
I certainly have one very, very big don't, and that's certainly don't lose sight of the bigger picture. And Hattie, I think you're absolutely right when you talk about the way businesses can, for example, engage with or respond to online reviews. My advice is always to remember that litigation is never an end in itself. It's always a means to an end, and of course comes with quite serious downsides that businesses need to be aware of. So absolutely don't lose sight of the bigger picture, and certainly don't rush in. This is defamation is unfortunately a very complex area of law, and what a business does in the immediate aftermath of a negative review can have quite significant implications further down the line. To just take one example, of course, you can imagine where a business sort of rushes in and posts a review or a response to a review that itself could be construed as being defamatory and puts it at risk of further complicating the matters, or even in the worst case scenario, being on the receiving end.
And that's a very good point, Claire. You know, if you've seen something as a business owner or as a passionate employee working for your business that's really damaging, and you think, well, actually, that's not quite fair or true, and that, you know, and I guess there is that immediate impulse to react, but you're right, two wrongs, as they say, don't make a right. And I'm sorry to use that pun, but it comes down to that essentially, doesn't it? As well as trying to protect your position as a business, should you have to take things further because they've just not been able to be resolved or the damage is so great.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And as I say, you know, really don't rush in, and do just think about, and I think the point you make about people relying on online reviews is right, and I do suspect that people are perhaps a bit savvier than they were before when they're looking at online reviews, and a business may be very upset about what looks to be a really damning review, but on closer inspection, you know, it seems to be so hyperbolic or so extreme that as a matter of reality, it may not be one that that subsequent readers give any real credence to. So all of these things just kind of feed into what should be the bigger picture for the businesses, which is what can I do to protect my position? What are the best things that I can do, the best sort of ways that I can manage this without making the situation worse or you know, there being downsides for me as a business?
No, absolutely. And I think just that statistic that over 63% of consumers say that when they've had a bad experience and they've put a bad review up, the retailer or the service provider has not bothered to respond. I think that perhaps trying to find out, well, who was that customer? Is there a way you can contact them? Or could you go online under their review and say, you know, quite simply, please contact us to discuss this further without, you know, going into the whys and the whats and the hows of what happened. That could be one way that you can reach out to this person who's saying they've had a bad experience or whatever it may be, and then look at, well, what do they actually want to put it right? What's the customer seeking? Are they seeking a refund? Are they seeking a voucher, a gift voucher, or some sort of, you know, recompense in that way? And just, I think one of the best things you said is don't rush in to respond and to go back with bang, you know, you're wrong, or how dare you, or this is incriminating, or this isn't true. Just take a step back and try to understand what does that customer actually want in order to, you know, accept that something may have gone wrong, a product may have stopped working, whatever it may be. Interestingly, in 2019, there were two cases in which the UK Supreme Court and the Welsh High Court made judgments on negative and defamatory Facebook and Twitter posts. The judges were tasked with deciding how a Facebook post and a Twitter tweet, if you like, would be interpreted. And they said that the advent of the 21st century has brought with it a new class of reader, the social media user, and that Twitter is a fast-moving medium. People will tend to scroll through messages relatively quickly and not really take much note. But what are the initial steps, would you say, Claire, that a business should consider if the review is so damaging that they are considering commencing legal proceedings of some sort?
Yeah, so golden rule, which I'm sure you've picked up on by now, is obviously get very early legal advice. That really should be step number one, because the way the business reacts in the minutes or hours or days that follow the review can be really significant. Two other things that I think are quite useful to just bear in mind at the early stage. One thing that's quite specific in defamation law, where the claimant is a business, is that there's a requirement on them to show that the publication has caused or is likely to cause serious harm. And for a business that trades for profit, that means serious financial loss. Now, one big stumbling block or potential stumbling block for businesses who wish to claim is that, you know, they may find, having looked through the material available, the information available, that really the business hasn't been sort of financially impacted. And what you don't want is to sort of be taking all these steps and commencing litigation and incurring lots of costs, only to find that that requirement for financial loss becomes a stumbling block, and a stumbling block that doesn't really resolve what you were concerned about as a business, which is, well, was this true or was this false? So I think one thing that businesses should bear in mind at a very early stage is how it really is affecting their bottom line, and really, can this be shown, and is there a causative link? Having a look and making those kinds of inquiries at the outset can often be really helpful when determining whether litigation is the way to go.
And that's Claire, I was just going to say that point, that's quite interesting, because I mean, I'm going to say this because it's very likely to be true. In America, I think it's very different. The rules can be very different, but in the UK, it's a fine line, isn't it? Because you might not be able to prove how it's affected the overall bottom line, but you know the fact that you know it's going to put customers off. It's a very tricky area to try and prove that financial loss that will come potentially, or that has come.
That's right, and you know, I think it's no coincidence that certainly in my experience, I see very few business claimants in defamation claims, and I suspect it's probably because of that requirement and the difficulties that it can pose for businesses.
But I think that's an excellent point you've made, and an excellent point for any business before they sit there, as you say, and say, right, lawyer up, as the term goes, let's see how we can really go after this person or these people who are really, you know, digging their teeth into our business. But can you prove as a business where the financial loss has happened or going to happen? And that is, I mean, it's undeniably a very clear point to be able to prove, but I would say quite a difficult one in that. Sorry, carry on.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think linked to that is the second sort of initial point that I would make to businesses, which is that they ought to consider their options outside of litigation. So, for instance, a lot of platforms will have takedown policies for breach of certain terms and conditions. Now, some of them tend to be less accommodating where the issue is defamation as opposed to harassment or privacy. It's content that infringes someone's privacy, but nonetheless it's always worth checking with a particular platform whether there are mechanisms which can be used where there are reviews that are suspected to be fake, for example, and they may be able to be taken down in accordance with whatever policy is in place.
Yes, no, indeed. Because then there comes this whole discussion of what should be freedom of speech and what shouldn't. And there is a big, big discussion on that, because one of these examples was under the Defamation Act, I think 1996, McDonald's restaurants versus Morrison Steele. It was a long time ago now, 2005. And in that case, Morrison Steele published a leaflet alleging McDonald's sold unhealthy food and exploited its workforce. The ruling under the Defamation Act was decided in McDonald's' favour. However, this led to criticism that the Defamation Act hinders free speech. And although these judgments were very, very long, I think they do illustrate how arguments over defamatory meanings continue to be pivotal in many social media libel claims and defamation claims, and how context as well as the content of the social media posts are important. But can you tell us of some high profile examples of businesses that have taken legal action in response to defamatory allegations, if I can get the words out, that you're aware of, please, Claire?
Sure. Well, Hattie, you've kind of preempted me, really.
Because oh, did I? Really I just thought that was really interesting, that case.
It is interesting, and actually I think serves as quite a useful cautionary tale, the McLibel case. It really does go to show the power of sort of the PR perspective on things, because there is a big, it's a big consideration for businesses. It's not just, well, legally and technically speaking, am I in the right or am I in the wrong? But really, you know, as I said right at the outset, litigation isn't an end in itself. And you've got to think about, well, how does this look to my consumers, my clients? And it really, I think, certainly from my perspective, is a real tale of how a business that ultimately succeeds in terms of the defamation action actually really finds that it's more of a Pyrrhic victory, not only because, as you say, there is a real sort of, you know, and rightly, you know, English law does guarantee freedom of expression in cases like this. And
it's a fine line, though, Claire, isn't it? It's a fine
absolutely, and
line.
Yeah, absolutely, and freedom of speech certainly isn't unfettered. But what I think businesses do have to keep a real eye on is how is it going to play out? And I think the McLibel, the tale from the McLibel case is really one of sort of David versus Goliath, and it really was not a good look, I don't think, for McDonald's to be taking on these two individual activists. The other thing that I think the McLibel case illustrates really well, and again is always something that businesses should think about, is the defamation claim, particularly where a defendant is going to say, well, actually, I'm going to stand by and prove the truth of the allegations I've made, is invariably going to involve a real airing of potentially dirty laundry, and the court's going to want to look at the substance of the allegations and the evidence that's available. And for example, in the McDonald's Corporation, there was some really unhelpful material that came into the public domain as a result of the defamation action. So businesses have to be very careful, again, and I've said it so many times, think bigger picture. Do I really want a court raking over the details of how my business operates? Am I concerned that there's just material that I just don't want, it's none of the court's business effectively, and I don't want to give the court and the defendants an opportunity to rake over all this material. I think there are better ways of protecting my reputation in response to a defamatory review, for example.
Yes. I mean, it's interesting, because if somebody has said something that turns out to be true, and this is one of the tests that the court will be looking at if you run down this legal route, is what they're saying true, then you can't really say, well, that's damaged my reputation, because what they're saying is true. Essentially, what we're saying here is damaging review. Well, there's two sides, really, isn't there? There's damaging reviews where somebody's had a bad experience, saying, this is my experience, it was terrible, it was bad, don't do business, don't buy, don't go for that product. And then there's damaging reviews because it's actually true. Utterly true. What's happened? This product broke, and this is what happened. Or in the McLibel case, as we've just said, they believed that McDonald's was selling unhealthy food in 2005. Some may argue that the case. Some may argue that not to be the case. So it's quite interesting when you look at it from that perspective, because you've got the malicious side where someone's just not happy, and then you've got the reality of it that is happy. What they're saying is true. And therefore,
absolutely,
yeah,
Absolutely. And it goes back to the point that I'm sure I'm slightly stuck on repeat, which is, you know, that absolutely don't jump into anything before you know the full picture. And of course, where it comes to individuals' experiences, you may not be able to know whether there's any truth in what they're saying unless you engage with the consumer, for example. And there are businesses who simply, you know, want to know, because if it is true, then of course they want to resolve the matter. So it may be that by engaging with the consumer and finding out what has prompted this defamatory review, they may say, well, as a business, you know, this is something we want to resolve with the consumer. As you say, that on the flip side, I've had experience of this acting for clients before, where you've got people who are making quite simply fabricated reviews, and you know, you may find that a very different approach is required for that. But it's so important not to pull the trigger too quickly on litigation without really sort of delving into, well, hang on, if I'm suddenly in court and being interrogated in this, is there any risk that the court's going to say, well, actually, this customer's review is really reflective of their experience, and you know, and that would be really the worst case scenario for a company.
So what about then, Claire, if it's a fabricated damaging review? Now, we've already established that for it to be damaging, you have to show financial loss, actual financial losses. So what if it's, does the court take a different perspective if the review is fabricated to if it is a real, actual bona fide complaint?
So one point that might be relevant where something is fabricated is that you may be looking at, rather than or in addition to a claim in defamation, for instance, you may think that a claim in malicious falsehood is applicable in a case like that, where somebody has published something that is untrue and that they know it's untrue, and they may have an ulterior motive for doing that. So it might be relevant in things like that, and obviously will be relevant to any issue of with the truth or falsity of the statement, because of course if it's a fabricated review, then there's going to be no substance to it, so it may be relevant there as well.
I hear that, and it's quite interesting, because of course our laws will span out into different areas and give you different options, like I call it almost like a menu in a restaurant. You're going to have all these options to take from. But you're right, if you have got any questions or queries, don't just jump into it. Try to seek advice early so you know what your position is, if it really is something so big, so damaging, or maybe so fabricated. But we've got time to discuss one more area, and what I'd like to ask is, how does our laws actually protect businesses, small or big, from damage to business and reputation? For example, if the person who posted a negative and damaging review is refusing to remove it, and I don't know whether you want to talk about that in the context of whether it was true what they said or whether it was fabricated. But how do businesses have protection in the law from that?
Yeah, I mean, really in the ways that we've discussed already. So your sort of go to causes of action would be defamation or malicious falsehood. The point to bear in mind as well, and you know, it sort of makes sense when you think about it, is that these two causes of action in particular have very, very short limitation periods. And the reasoning behind it is that, you know, anybody who is the subject of a negative review, particularly in the online and fast moving age that we're in today, you know, things move quickly and the news cycle moves on. So actually, people, potential claimants who are the subject of negative reviews, it is assumed, should be acting quite quickly to get the situation rectified. So that's the thinking behind what is a uniquely short limitation period for these causes of action. It's 12 months from the date.
I was just going to say, what is it? 12 months.
So again, you know, feeds into another top tip, which is, of course, you know, if you do have concerns about something that's been posted online, absolutely don't delay in getting that advice. It's really crucial to act quickly when you're dealing with these kinds of things.
Yes, no, indeed. And that is very crucial, because if you're out of time, and we've said this on many podcasts before, you're out of time. That's it. There is no, oh, but it was a day over or 2 days over. Out of time means out of time.
There's a little bit of a grey area, but ideally, as a potential client, you don't even want to.
Of course there's a grey area, Claire. Why wouldn't there be a grey area? This is the law. There's lots of greys. But no, that lots of key points here. You know, don't shoot off the hip. Don't act quickly in the sense that you see it and go, bang, I'm going to respond instantly. If you have colleagues or people within the business that you could discuss it with, find out what the claimant or the person actually making the review is trying to seek. Are they being malicious? Is what they're saying actually true? Can you get in contact with them and try to resolve it? Or maybe you've passed that stage. And if it is financially affecting your business, then seek legal advice quickly. within 12 months, within the time limitation.
Absolutely, yeah. Don't delay, but don't do anything without thinking it through and ideally getting legal advice.
Do you do direct taxes, Claire?
I do, yes. Right. I and some of my colleagues at Doughty Street do, yes.
Yes, so Claire does direct access, which means as a barrister, you can go straight through to Doughty Street Chambers, speak to her clerk about instructing her for any work that you may have that you need legal advice and to seek legal advice on. I've said this before, not all areas of work are suitable for direct access, but there are lots that are. And it does help you keep your costs down. It does mean you have to be on top of your own work as well to work with the barrister. But direct access is a great, great, great source of getting legal help. So I thought I'd put that out there as well. But Claire, that's all we've got time for.
Thanks, Hattie.
Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate that.
No problem at all. It's a pleasure.
And I will be dragging you in for a part two, to say the life is online now, you know, so there'll be lots to talk about. And I'm sure we'll get lots of listener questions that we can put together and answer in a part two podcast. What I'll say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.
Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com